Welcome to the Ministry of Truth. This is the Ministry of Truth. I'm Mitchell Stripinchuk. On today's show, we'll hear an excerpt of a presentation by Lionel Jean-Baptiste reporting about the International Tribunal on Haiti in Chicago on September 28, 2005. We'll also include a feature of news about media and democracy entitled Media Minutes. But first, let's hear these headlines from around the web and around the world. From the Chicago Independent Media Center, dozens and then hundreds of Chicago-area community members delayed in dramatic fashion a national anti-immigrant organizations meeting in Chicago's Arlington Heights suburb on the morning of October 15, 2005. Activists linked their bodies arm in arm to form a human chain at the gates of the school where a meeting of the Minuteman Project was slated to take place. The protest at the gates of the Christian Liberty Academy on Euclid Avenue saw some 15 to 25 activists at their height form a human blockade 3 lines thick at the entrance to the conference. The number of protesters had significantly outnumbered Arlington Heights police, who called for additional backup from at least 5 other nearby suburbs. The stakes increased dramatically around noon when some 400 anti-Minuteman protesters from assorted communities in Chicago arrived via a bus convoy. The barricade then dispersed to join the rally with the intent to reconvene later that afternoon. Soon after, a team of police officers physically isolated an activist who had stood on the front line of the barricade. Protesters surrounded the police and the attempted arrest and tried to pull the activist out of custody. At that point, more police arrived to enter the fray, leading to more activist arrests. The day ended abruptly around 1:40 p.m. when a busload of riot police arrived to disperse the crowd. Those arrested could be counted among the most outspoken activists, those targeted as, quote, leaders, unquote, and, quote, agitators, unquote, of the morning's barricade. All the arrestees were later released that evening. From the Chicago Independent Media Center. Over 40 Chicago-area activists, most from local indigenous communities, protested the city's Columbus Day Parade on October 10, 2005. Police arrested one activist who was charged with an, quote, offensive utterance, unquote. Indigenous activists resisted the parade, complete with corporate floats, high school marching bands, JROTC, and other military school students, police, and other icons of Eurocentric dominance, through their cultural traditions, using dance and ceremony. Other activists carried out a die-in, others talked with spectators, and still others chanted along the route. In Chicago, Columbus Day has been taken up by the Italian-American communities as the day to celebrate their heritage, while in some countries like Venezuela, they celebrate Indigenous Resistance Day instead. After a closing ceremonial event that thanked ancestors and the Mexica Creator for the survival of culture, protesters at the parade vowed to make it an annual event, hoping to bring hundreds more in subsequent years. From the New Standard. Citing privacy concerns, over 100 organizations, on October 18, 2005, sent a letter to Defense Secretary Donald Rumsfeld demanding the immediate cessation of the Pentagon's student recruiting database. The coalition, which includes a number of civil liberties, religious, anti-war, and parent groups, says that the centralized gathering of information on some 30 million young Americans is a direct violation of the 1974 Privacy Act. Reportedly, the Pentagon has spent around $206 million on collecting about 12 million names for the database thus far. From the New Standard. Suffering under a budget crunch, America's national parks are turning to corporate sponsors to cover millions of dollars in expenses. The move to allow companies to brand portions of the nation's most pristine wilderness is a marked change from the National Park Service's current passive acceptance of corporate largesse. According to documents released by Public Employees for Environmental Responsibility, the National Park Service is readying to accept outside solicitations to keep parks open and fully functional. Other intrusive corporate fundraisers under consideration include cell phone towers, low-altitude flights, and snowmobile and all-terrain vehicle access, according to a report in the Salt Lake Tribune. From the New Standard. Citing the skyrocketing rate of life without parole convictions handed down to minors and the racial and economic disparities in sentencing youths, two human rights organizations on October 12, 2005, called for new options in dealing with juvenile offenders. Both groups want an end to life without parole sentencing for children in the United States. According to a report released by Human Rights Watch and Amnesty International, the rate of life sentences imposed on minors has more than doubled between 1990 and 2000, bringing the total number of such punishments to at least 2,225. Moreover, youth life sentences are meted out to blacks at 10 times the rate they are to whites for similar crimes. From Democracy Now! Over 100 people were arrested on October 15, 2005 in Toledo, Ohio, after a riot broke out in the north section of the city where a neo-Nazi group planned to march through a predominantly African-American neighborhood. The group, known as the National Socialist Movement, said they were invited to come to the area by a white resident who complained to them about, quote, black criminal behavior, unquote. The Nazis planned to march through a predominantly African-American neighborhood, but authorities called it off when a large counter-demonstration assembled in response. The two sides hurled racial insults at each other for more than an hour, and then, police allege, counter-demonstrators started to hurl rocks at the Nazis. The police then called off the Nazi march, but the violence escalated. By Sunday night, 114 people were arrested on charges that included rioting, burglary, felonious assault, and carrying a concealed weapon. National Geographic reports that a new study shows that 20% of human genes have been patented in the United States, primarily by private firms and universities. The study is the first time that a detailed map has been created to match patents to specific physical locations on the human genome. Some genes have up to 20 patents, asserting rights to how those genes can be used. The Guardian of London reports that Iraqis preoccupied with the struggle of daily life under U.S. occupation express little interest in the trial of former Iraqi dictator Saddam Hussein. Many Iraqis seem to consider Saddam an irrelevant relic from another era. Many Sunni Arabs suspect that Saddam is facing a kangaroo court, another front in the campaign against their sect. Some have reportedly started killing and terrorizing Shias in revenge for the trial. These are some headlines from around the world. We encourage you to visit and support online independent news efforts like The New Standard, newstandardnews.net. Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, and the Chicago Independent Media Center, chicago.indymedia.org. You're listening to the Ministry of Truth.
Welcome to Media Minutes, a weekly review of news relating to the intersection of media and democracy. I'm John Anderson.
And I'm Kimberly Cronick.
Earlier this month, Clear Channel CEO Mark Mays traveled to Washington, D.C. and told some tall tales to investment bankers and others assembled for a luncheon sponsored by the Progress and Freedom Foundation, a market-friendly think tank which is in part funded by Clear Channel itself, along with several other media conglomerates. Unencumbered by a critical audience, Mays purveyed quite a few whoppers of misinformation and twisted figures, like the justification he gave for lobbying the FCC and Congress to further relax radio station ownership limits.
Each of the two satellite radio companies has more than 120 stations in every single market in the continental United States. In contrast, free radio is limited to just 8 stations per market.
This statement is an apples-to-oranges comparison. Satellite radio companies XM and Sirius may have more than 120 channels, but they're national radio services, meaning the same 120 channels are available nationwide. In contrast, Clear Channel owns 10 times the number of channels than XM or Sirius, more than 1,200 radio stations nationwide. Another half-truth involved Mays' strange braggadocio about Clear Channel's anemic efforts to produce local news.
Today, Clear Channel has more than 500 local news and information reporters working in 155 local markets, rivaling any other national broadcast organization, and we believe surpassing many.
These raw figures sound impressive, but Mays forgot to mention that those 500 reporters actually serve more than a single station. Many work for multiple stations at once, and in some cases, Clear Channel consolidates news staff in smaller markets and then feeds news to larger ones, voice tracking the news, just like it regularly does with DJs. The reality is that the number of full-time journalists employed in radio has been cut in half over the last 10 years, and the number of part-time reporters slashed by more than 70%. Well, more than 1,000 local radio news operations have disappeared due to consolidation. But Mark Mays did let a few nuggets of truth slip his lips, like the fact that they've squeezed just about as much money as they can out of broadcast radio without further consolidation.
The cost of competing with new technologies and increased listener choice is staggering, and profits are down.
And he predicts a battle for hearts and minds in the making, especially if his dream of a complete removal of limits on radio station ownership is to be realized.
We do have a political battle in that we need to make sure that people understand that difference, that really diversity of programming is what people and the American public want. It's not diversity of ownership.
This last one, of course, ignores the millions of public comments filed with the FCC during its contentious 2003 review of media ownership rules, more than 99% of which opposed further media concentration. For the record, Clear Channel's revenue in the second quarter of this year topped $2.5 billion. Nearly a billion of that came from the company's radio division.
Next year, new FCC rules are set to take effect that aim to reduce the amount of advertising in children's TV shows. The provisions limit the amount of commercial promotions in any given hour of children's television to 12 minutes on weekdays and 10.5 on weekends. The marketing of commercial websites via TV characters will also be banned. Major media companies are fighting the changes tooth and nail. Executives from Disney, Viacom, Time Warner, and News Corp have personally lobbied FCC commissioners for several months now, seeking a delay in the implementation of the new rules. That does not seem to be working, however, so now Disney and Viacom are asking the D.C. Circuit Court of Appeals to step in and declare the changes null and void. For its part, Disney's already claimed that limiting its ability to sell to kids violates the company's First Amendment rights.
Recent revelations about the extent of the Bush administration's illegal use of covert propaganda to influence domestic policy may light a fire under Congress to take action to prevent such abuses from occurring again. In April, the Truth in Broadcasting Act was introduced in the Senate, which would require government-produced news to be labeled as such. Although the bill presently has just a handful of co-sponsors, the Senate's Commerce Committee will soon vote on whether or not to send the bill to the floor. Phone, fax, and email campaigns are underway to convince senators to take a stand against covert propaganda, as well as to pressure the Justice Department to prosecute those who broke the law. More information on these campaigns can be found online at freepress.net. Just click on Stop News Fraud. You've been listening to Media Minutes, a joint production of the Illinois Initiative for Media Policy Research at the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign and Free Press, a national nonpartisan organization dedicated to media democracy. For more information, visit our website at freepress.net.
This is the Ministry of Truth. I'm Mitchell Stepinchik. During a 5-day visit to Haiti, a commission of inquiry dispatched by the International Tribunal on Haiti gathered evidence of and testimony about new massacres and other crimes against humanity which allegedly have been committed in Haiti since February 29, 2004, when United States soldiers kidnapped elected President Jean-Bertrand Aristide and flew him into exile. Lionel Jean-Baptiste took part in the tribunal and reported his findings in a presentation at the No Exit Cafe on Chicago's North Side on September 28, 2005. This is an excerpt of his presentation.
The prosecutor presented her witnesses and presented Ira Cusbin. You guys know Ira Cusbin. Ira is an attorney who has represented the government of Haiti, has represented Aristide. He's been very, very close to the events going on in Haiti. Ira presented, on events leading up to the capture of Aristide, He also presented on violations of human rights that were going on. So we had some very solid witnesses who had direct evidence to present. At the end of the presentations, Ramsey Clark had come and talk about his work in general, because he's supposed to be the one who will try to give us access to the Hague. He knows the ins and outs of that. And then, in conclusion, there was a jury, and the jury found a number of specific defendants that we had enough evidence against, guilty of the charges of violation of human rights. So the good thing was, I thought that the presence of so many people to see that kind of direct evidence, was very important. As people came in, too, there were a number of pictures of the gruesome details on the walls. So the tribunal itself was a shock to people's consciousness. And the expectation is that the findings will be forwarded to The Hague, and we'll move on to different cities to do this type of presentation and continue to do that kind of work. As I answered somebody earlier, I didn't see any mainstream media the next day cover anything. I don't know whether any were there. But it was a good effort. It was a national effort. People came from throughout the country to
Pacific Voice there, another radio.
And, you know, the Haitian situation is one that represented a historical contradiction between a group of people who have always been struggling for a decent quality of life, and the United States, along with France and Canada, seeking to dominate and suppress and maintain the people in abject poverty in collaboration with the local comprador bourgeoisie, whose interest is strictly to maintain domination, maintain control of the commerce, and who have historically been protected by the United States. I mean, even the military of Haiti was a creation of the United States between 1950 and 1934, and it's played a specific role. And that has been to execute the orders of the United States in Haiti. Haiti has been subject to 33 coups d'etat. 33. Has consistently been interrupted in terms of trying to build a democratic society, a society that's stable economically. The U.S. has funded directly entities such as, regimes such as Papa Doc and Baby Doc. I mean, when Baby Doc left, he had $400 million. You know, he left with $400 million. So, you know.
Is he working in the U.S. now?
Is he where?
Is he working in the U.S.?
No, he's in France.
He is in
he's in France. You know, that's the kind of abuse and that was promoted and supported. When the people overthrew Jean-Claude Duvalier, before they transitioned into a democratic government, I mean, there were a number of military personnel who were put in place by the United States to try to, blunt the struggle of the people, or civilian personnel, but it was always trying to determine for the people what and who their leadership ought to be. So that struggle continues today. There supposedly will be election in November 20th, and there are about 46 candidates right now. And, there's a candidate who lives in the United States. He's Haitian born, but his name is Dumas Simeus. He's a very successful businessman in food. And, you know, he is no longer a Haitian citizen, but given the chaos that exists, you know, it's very possible that he may, you know, the system may allow him to slip in. Rene Préval, who was the president before Aristide's last term, is also a candidate. And, of course, a number of the so-called rebels, Guy Philippe, former members of terrorists and death squads, is a candidate. People like former members of the opposition who have now divided the various candidates coming out of their camp. So there's a lot going on. But for things to happen, they must suppress the masses of people.
That was Lionel Jean-Baptiste presenting part of his findings in a presentation at the No Exit Cafe on Chicago's North Side on September 28, 2005. You're listening to The Ministry of Truth.